What's up, everyone? Welcome to the 546th episode of the Pokemon Podcast. It's super effective. I'm your host, Steve. With me is Hannah.
I'm here. I'm still not Will. I'm sorry. I miss that, Will, too.
That is not a thing to apologize for. I just saw Will this week, and I shared with him everybody's well wishes while I went and visited his hermit hole, dug him out of his hibernation, lobbed people's comments at him, and left. Mm. He's appreciative. Actually, if you can find him right now, you can ask him questions. He's decided to be online for approximately 2 seconds.
Greg also here.
I am also here. I have also returned from lunch. Welcome to the new year. Welcome to 2023. I can't believe what a major change happened. Saturday night at midnight, the whole world is different. Who knew what the 2023 would look like? I am shocked.
Oh, yeah. This will be the first episode of 2023, although we're recording this on the 30th before the holiday.
Give away the inside baseball.
Oh, you know, it's
now
it's
my
like...
whole thing. Now my whole thing comes across as fake.
It's like
how
all
dare
the
you?
Pokemon Go events. I'm sure it was good. We're recording the
I'm
day
sure
before.
It was, we had the best time. Boy, did we ring in the new year. Whew. I drank the things.
We got three things to talk about today. We haven't given Pokemon Masters any love, and gacha games usually do a big New Year's thing. So we got that to talk about. There was a poll in Japan with the top 30 Pokemon from Scarlet and Violet. You won't believe who was number three.
I do.
And then the Cinderace raids just happened, or started to, last night, Thursday night, although they're going all weekend. I guess we can start with the Cinderace raids, because I spent 7 hours straight doing Cinderace. Not that because I failed over and over, just because I was like...
let's talk about your life choices. To do them for 7 hours straight.
I look, Greg, as somebody who sat, you know, before I was, when I had a 9-to-5 job, I would get home and I would sit in Destiny and I would do King's Fall like 4 hours just to help people go through, or, you know, the luck of the draw of we have this really bad person and, you know, we don't know if we should kick them out or not, but they.
And now you're doing it for your job.
Always kick the person to the curb. If there's a problem person, don't do them any favors.
What if they're really nice but bad?
Kick. You know how many times my better judgment has saved you from being kicked out of Final Fantasy raids? A lot.
This is what I was going to say last week as we were preparing for the Cinderace raids. I mentioned last week that I was not a competitive player growing up. I didn't have the time to learn that stuff, and I could very, very easily be one of the people bringing the Azumarill to these raids if it wasn't for the people I know who are helping make things, make resources like Steve, that make these easier and make thinking about competitive easier.
Well, tell you that by the time this came out, I have probably done a Cinderace raid. Have I done one yet? No, because I didn't get home yesterday until 10:30 p.m. and the thought of turning on my Switch, and like I was like, no, I just want to go to bed.
I spent yesterday evening doing them. I did spend yesterday evening doing them, and they are difficult. I won maybe 1 in 5. I was doing them with random people though the entire time.
Yeah. Oh boy!
Well, first day random anything, like first day random dungeons are always like nobody knows what's going on.
Six star raids, because those are just as wild.
Look, we don't have time to talk about 6 star raids right now, but by Saturday people will have learned, right? Like first day is always bad, and then usually by Saturday people have caught on to what they need to do, or they got their one and stopped playing, and it's only the hardcore people left.
Correct.
Or they got advice from the wrong person.
Yeah, it's the Azumarill problem all over again, right? Like a couple of YouTubers made Azumarill really popular, and you know, this is why Azumarill was coming to every raid before and after Charizard, because it was like, well, it worked here. My fear of people being this was my fear. My fear was, well, Azumarill worked for Charizard. I don't see why it wouldn't work for Cinderace. I'm lazy. I'm just going to use Azumarill. That was a reality. Here's a couple. Let me say something good here. I think that these raids are a fantastic way to get people to return to the game. And I know that like things like Twitch or Twitter or whatever are not a good gauge of what is that? Like a player base.
Right.
But when there is something exciting happening in like Pokemon Go or whatever other insert game here, when your viewer base just dramatically trickles up, well, like when you double your viewers, triple your viewers, because of an event, that's a good sign that the event is building excitement or people want to do it, right? Or people are interested. At least, you know, in the Twitch space, you know, on launch day, you have a lot of viewers. And then you have the hardcore people that stick around and watch. And then you have the people that, like, they play the game for 2 weeks and now they moved on to another game. And that's totally cool. Not everyone plays Pokemon for 3 years straight until the next Pokemon game comes out. I had more people watching me play Cinderace than on launch day. And I think probably part of that was because I made guides and then people were like, because a lot of people were, I had so many people for the first time being like, this is my first time in stream. Also, Twitch tells you that. It'll say like, first time chatter. And they're like, I used your guides. It worked. Or I've been listening to the podcast for years. This is my first time watching your stream because I wanted help with Cinderace. So that was fantastic. And it was really nice to see like people being like, holy cow, I couldn't do this before I got here. And the people in your community were really great and really helpful. That is the same, you know, if I go outside of my own Twitch channel and I look at other people and their numbers are really good. And, you know, you look at the YouTube video stuff and like Cinderace help video has more views than like everything else. It's like people, it seems that the general consensus are these raids are exciting enough or challenging enough, or the Pokemon choice is good enough where people want to come back, even if they haven't played in the last 2 weeks.
It at least says, because it is hard to pull actual data, right? Like, it would be great if we actually got data from the Pokemon Company about an uptick. We can guess that judging by an uptick of numbers that they saw an increase of players. We don't know that for sure, right? Like, the difficulty about extrapolating out of a very limited data set where we're not accounting for confirmation bias and only looking at the positives to say for sure, like, this is a huge win for Pokemon. But we can safely say it looks like this brought a lot of people back.
My experience has been that with Sword and Shield, I am not sure I participated in a single raid event in Sword and Shield.
Oh, like the shiny ones?
Oh.
Yep, in any of them. Not the shiny ones, not the legendary ones, just none. I didn't have time. It was my end of college time, beginning of post-college time. Just didn't bother with it. And at this point, they are in these games again. I am starting to accept that this is how they are doing rare Pokemon distributions at this point, for the most part. And so I am starting to get into them more. And so as this keeps being a more important thing, I think more people will keep showing up.
I guess I had the same experience with, like, I'm going to use this Destiny as an example. Like Destiny, you could always tell throughout like the seasons. Again, you know, a lot of these companies don't share numbers or anything. They're not. I don't think there's a lot of reason to, right? Like, it's not like no. Bungie's being like, well, you know, August was a little slow, but we rolled out the update. But you could always get that feeling, right? You could always get that feeling by joining like Crucible and being like, oh my God, it's taking forever to match with somebody. And then if there's like a big weekend like Iron Banner, it's like, okay, you're getting matched instantly because like we have enough players to put people into queues. You know, when Destiny would do like when their raids, obviously way more complex, would come out, you could tell that the tower was just more lively. You could just literally look at your friends list and be like, well, a week ago there was 6 people on, this week there are 45 people on. Like this event has brought back people.
Yeah,
that I mean, that's really cool. Like, not everyone is into shiny Pokemon, right? Not everyone is in competitive. Not everyone is into every event that every company does. I don't know that these are the best events, but people want Cinderace, that's for sure. Like, people want Charizard. I'm sure when they eventually do Greninja, people will want to do Greninja. You know, I don't know if they put a Beedrill in one of these raids, if it's going to be as popular.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not overly thrilled of the only way to get X Pokemon is that it's in a super hard raid weekend. Like, I don't know that I'm 100% behind that philosophy. If that's the only thing they do for 3 years, I'm like, is this really...
You could trade for
fun?
It.
Yeah, after that, you can trade with anybody who did the raids. So they'll be out there.
But, I mean...
Get those eggs.
I don't know if that is my ideal only distribution method, right? Like, I think they're fun for now, but again, the same thing happens in other online things. If the same sort of content comes out, it gets diminishing returns. People are like, I don't want to struggle on this one again. I will wait for somebody to trade it to me. So I hope they shake up the formula up somewhat, that it's not always going to be a 7-star raid, that maybe there'll be a multi-weekend where it's, you know, they're like the Delibird thing where, you know, it's 1-5 and it's shaken up more than the only way to get this rare Pokemon is to do this incredibly difficult raid. Because I think that will, a year in, be like, I am worn out. Like, it's kind of the same thing with the Pokemon Go thing with raids. It's like, no, I don't care anymore. I don't care that this is the only way to get Terrakion this weekend. I do not want to do this anymore.
I mean, in Sword and Shield, they had, what, like, 3 kind of raids? They had, like, the increased shiny ones, which were hit and miss, because if it was like 100% Cramorant, but 2% of them could be shiny, it was like, this is statistically harder than if it was like,
yeah,
the Wailord, which is like in 50% of the raids, but like the math on that, I was always like, some of these are easier and harder, or more or less luck based, I should say. So they did the shiny raids in Sword and Shield. Then they did the Zeraora like raids where you couldn't catch Zeraora. But they also did that with Zeraora, where if you stumbled upon the shiny Zeraora, which you could also not catch, that Zeraora would be more difficult. I would say Zeraora and Mewtwo were kind of the similar thing. And the last one they ended with was Glastrier and Spectrier, which was, again, very similar. And then they did do the thing that Greg just suggested, which was like, we're putting all the starters in raids, and this is the first time you can catch them in whatever. So they did have like 3 different like systems. I guess Delibird and now these are, or the like the Cinderace are like the 2 they've shown. They haven't shown the shiny one yet, which I'm sure they will show. I'm sure that will happen too. Like, right? I'm like, I don't know though. Like, we don't know the numbers, like Greg says. We don't know if people did come back.
Right.
But I think part of the reason maybe why people didn't come back is because those were so poorly advertised. I don't think these are any better advertised.
These aren't great advertised.
I think the only reason
either.
They're working is because they started them right away. Right. Yeah. Like, the shiny stuff didn't start until after New Year's of Sword and Shield. And then it kind of went away for a bit, and then it came back. And then like some months we got it, some months we didn't. You know, Janine working on the calendar over the Pokemon company, you know, she's not consistent.
She's not consistent, but she loves everything on one weekend. Yeah, it's hard to say also how much of the influx are people who just finally got the game for Christmas. Like, I would just love to see the actual numbers to see, was it this event? Was it because it was the first event right after everybody got the game for Christmas?
That's true. It could have been Christmas.
What does that look like? Like, I think that it'll be more telling the second time Cinderace is up, to see if it matched what it was like the second time for Charizard, because Charizard was before the holiday gift-giving thing happened.
Yeah.
So I just, the only reason why I want to see the numbers from the actual companies, because I'm just fascinated by what the actual return rate is. Because you got to imagine that it's pretty easy to put these up, right? Like,
oh yeah, I'm
they
sure. Have,
they just sub something in, and there's like little effort for big return. It's like, as a corporation concept, like, that's a huge win to be like, well, just put one Pokemon in this existing thing and we get all these people back. I'm curious what those numbers look like. I'm curious what that actually does for them. And I think overall, even if it peters out, I think it's a net win for them. I think it does keep a big enough segment interested that they'll have a lot of life out of it. I'm just, again, as a player, I get bored of the same thing pretty quickly now. Like, if it's always going to be the same, I'm like,
you know, this is what I've always wanted in a Pokemon game. I've always wanted a game that gave you a reason to return back, not only for myself, but for like other people, right? Like, you know, going back to an MMO, like a World of Warcraft or a Final Fantasy, the reason why people stop playing it is because their community of friends stop playing it, right? Like, if you log, like when, you know, I would log into Final Fantasy 14, that was before Greg was playing, there was, you know, 20 different people on my friends list that I would play with consistently. And then after a couple months, it was 18 people, and then it was 15 people. And then, it, you know, sometimes people came back and then they fell off. And then near the end of Final Fantasy 14, it was like literally like five people. And then Greg started playing and it was like, I just fell off. If a game doesn't have that, you get that fall off faster. So like having something to be, having an event or events or updates to have people return back to, like, is like, I think really healthy for any kind of game, whether this is Pokemon or...
It's interesting because Final Fantasy, like, the director of the game, because people were like, you know, the next patch doesn't come out for another, I want to say it's another month, right? Like, they have another big raid thing. And he literally said in his address, he's like, I know people are leaving the game because there's nothing new to do. And he said, and that's good. Please go do something else. Play other games. Like, don't feel that you owe us your repeated time right now. Like, come back and do the new content. He's like, it's perfectly healthy, and we expect you all to leave for a while because we don't have new content. That's part of our business model. Like, we understand this is how people play games. So I think that's sort of a to me, was a very refreshing take on a company being like, we understand that while we are taking time to work on something, you may leave, and we hope to make something exciting to bring you back. But it doesn't cause pure chaos for us to know that you've left for a while and that our numbers go down. Like, it's part of the pattern of long-lasting games.
Sounds like they have a lot of confidence people will come back.
Well, they are very, very good. Like, everybody is very eager for the next step in this story, so I don't think they have anything to worry about.
So by the time this podcast comes out, the first round of Cinderace will be over. And then the second round of Cinderace will come back January 13th through the 15th. This is UTC time, by the way. I think we said this last week, but like, it'll, you know, Thursday night on January 13th at like 6 p.m. Central Time, Cinderace should come back. Cinderace had I think the most shocking thing here is Cinderace only had five moves, whereas Charizard had eight moves. Cinderace has Pyro Ball. Who would have guessed that one?
What?
Surprise.
It had High Jump Kick. I did say for weeks I suspected it to have Iron Head, and it did. It had Acrobatics, and then it had High Jump Kick and Bulk Up. So I don't necessarily think eight moves is like harder.
I didn't really pay attention to this before with Charizard, but is it that it has a pool of five moves and you get a random four? Or does it have access to all five?
Yeah,
all
so of six, okay. There are six-star raids currently that have six moves.
Okay.
I've
not been paying attention enough to notice.
Yeah, so there are raids in the game, six and five stars, that have five to six moves. I think there's one six-star raid that has like three moves. It's like Claude Sire or something where it, like, it only has like three moves. So yeah, it's not necessarily more moves makes it harder or easier. I think that like sometimes when a gym leader has like two, I think Larry has like two moves on one of his Pokemon.
But yeah,
you know, if the AI is programmed to be like 60% of the time use this move, 40% of the time to use this move, or it's much easier, right? Like, I think everyone's been in a wild Pokemon battle where they like use Spore, and then the next turn they use Spore, and then the next turn they use Spore, and then it's like the AI is like you don't like, if you were slightly smarter AI, you would maybe do something a little bit different. And I think the thing that maybe threw people off, so some people, you know, everyone's experience is going to be easy, right? Like some people are like, oh, you know, Cinderace was easier. Charizard was easier. I don't think Charizard did anything to boost its stats. It had like Sunny Day, which by the time it put Sunny Day up, it actually, Sunny Day hurt its Hurricane, which probably did the most damage to most people based off Fairy type and Fire type. But Cinderace has access to Bulk Up, which is a really great move. Bulk Up will increase your...
Did Charizard have Dragon Dance?
No.
Which one did I have Dragon Dance? Oh boy, they're all blurring together.
No Dragon Dance on Charizard. Bulk Up increases your physical attack by one stage and your physical defense by one stage. So there's ways around this, like taunting. But like Charizard, or like a lot of 6-star raid bosses, Cinderace goes first twice. Charizard did this as well. Charizard would normally start with Overheat, do major damage to somebody who could take fire damage, and then it would use its second turn to decrease or to clear its own stats. Cinderace would like bulk up right away in acrobatics and pretty much do 50 to 60% to most Pokemon that were getting brought to the raid, and then it would continue to bulk up. So I built graphics, they're still out there. And I relied on Chilling Water would decrease Cinderace's physical attack stat. So, you know, if it bulked up, you Chilling Water, you know, it's plus one. Chilling Water brings it to negative one. It's back to zero. So ideally, you could have one person in the raid just spam Chilling Water the entire time. And it is so beneficial to the entire team that that's all they can do, right? And again, this reminds me of like a Final Fantasy or a Destiny, mm-hmm. where like you have one task this entire raid. As long as you keep doing your task, you help out everyone else.
I wish that people actually did it.
Yeah. And then, you know, the other moves just, you know, do damage based on the bulk up. I think also people, I saw a couple times where people were using Light Screen, which we saw in Charizard, people were using Reflect, like just a misunderstanding of what these moves do. There were people that continued to bring physical Pokemon. While I don't think Cerulege is like a bad Pokemon, Chilling Water just decreases Cinderace's physical attack. It still gets that physical defense boost, but it's very easy to ignore when you're using special attackers, right? You don't have to worry about that at all. But I think that mechanic, as simple as it is for probably people listening to the show because they're Pokemon fans, that mechanic threw some people for a loop. Like, why is my Play Rough not doing that much damage? Well, Play Rough is a physical type move, and Cinderace is plus four physical defense right now. Like, so I still stand by like the top three. I tweeted this. You know, would be Slowbro, Armor Rouge, and Pelipper. I think those are really good choices. The random connecting, I did do like two random with just randoms just to see how that was. It was exactly how you expected it to be, where one, if you're lucky, one of the randoms were really trying hard and it was very respectable. Then the other two were just like, I'm going to bring Meowscarada. And it's like, I understand that, you know, your Meowscarada was your starter and it's probably your strongest, but it's grass. And that Pokemon in front of you still has a fire type move.
I did maybe 15 to 20 of these with random people. And almost every single one, the majority of the people were bringing the Pokemon you recommended. The problem is that everyone was looking out for themselves and not for the entire team. Especially with Slowbro, some advice got around to use Iron Defense.
Yes, that was the very popular YouTubers.
And when they are only doing that, that's a problem.
Yeah, I never really experienced that in like a Final Fantasy where, well, that's not true.
hold on, let's back this up a little bit.
So it was always frustrating in Destiny where like people would put so much effort into like, for this example, I'm going to use cheesing. It'll all come back around. People would put so much effort into doing it like a way that was not the way you were supposed to, because quote unquote, it was easier. So a really good example of this was in Crota's End, which was the second ever Destiny raid. There was this bridge, and you needed two people to stand on platforms, and then one person would cross the bridge. There's six people in Destiny, because otherwise the bridge would disappear. And so you had six people on one side, and there's enemies on both sides, and you had to slowly move people over one at a time. And then once enough people were on the other side, they would activate the bridge and bring the rest of the people over. So what it did is it ended up in a situation where five people were on one side, one person was on the other, so it was one person trying to fight off everyone. And then eventually it was four and then two. And then when you got to the end, now the last person to go was in the disadvantage of like fighting off everyone as the rest of the team. So it was like this, you pretty much send your strongest person over first, and then you send your other strongest person over last, right? You want like the weaker people to go in the middle, so when they get over there, they have health, right? It's a, like, I just explained the whole mechanic. That's it. That's the entire fight. You have two people step on a platform, you move it over, right? Most raid mechanics at their core are very simple. It's just like the execution of what you need to do on top of if one person dies, it kind of makes the whole thing fall apart. So like the most important part of a Destiny raid is staying alive. Hey, what's the most important part of these Pokemon raids? Also staying alive. What people would do for Crota's End, instead of doing what I just explained, which is very simple, stay alive, stand on some platforms, you know, if you need help, call for help. They would climb on top of the unclimbable tower. They would like glitch their way on top of the tower, and they would spend sometimes up to 20 minutes. They would be like, hold on, I've done this before with my cousin Joe. As soon as we get up this tower, it'll be okay. And then so they climb up this tower you're not supposed to climb up to. And then they sit up there with a sniper rifle, and then they slowly knock out the enemies on the other side until it triggers like the failsafe, so the bridge just goes up by default. And it was just like, you have put so much effort into avoiding this mechanic because you couldn't, you didn't know how to do it, right? Like you've just, and this would happen in a variety of Destiny raids where people would be like, hey, my second cousin's wife's sister's dog showed me this strategy. Just give me the next 45 minutes so I can like glitch over here so we can safely do this. Instead of just like learning mechanics. And again, I don't know if I had that hardcore like memory in Final Fantasy where somebody was like, hey, let me just...
Well, what's funny is because of what used to happen is tanks would pull everything up to the boss. So they would pull four rooms of mobs and expect everybody to try to kill them all at the same time, which would work for a high end. Like if you had the max gear, you could possibly do it. They changed now how they design dungeons that you can only go through two rooms and then there's a hard door. And until you clear out those two rooms, you can't go forward. They have physically changed how they design their content to stop people from doing these bizarre, huge pulls that would only work 10% of the time. The game developers are like, nope, you don't get to do that anymore. We're done. There's a door now or a bridge that has to fall, and it won't fall until everything's dead. No more. We're done. But it's also the same thing where a healer's like, I'm just going to DPS because we'll kill it faster. It's like, yeah, but we also need to stay alive.
Yeah.
So if you could heal, no, you're not going to heal. You're not going to clear the doom counter over my head. I'm just going to die in 10 seconds. Oh, cool. Thanks.
So what Hannah said, there's this new strat where I actually made this. If you go watch my YouTube video, I suggested a stored power Bronzong build. Like 2 weeks ago, I was like, this is a possibility. And I specifically said in the YouTube video, like, you know, only do this with friends. It's a little more complicated. You know, I wouldn't recommend this Bronzong out of the five other Pokemon I recommended here. I was like, this is mostly for fun. Like if you've done some Cinderaces, maybe try this Bronzong build. It's like really fun and it'll work for you. There's a Slowbro build going out around right now, which is three iron defenses, which does make it very hard for Cinderace to kill you, and then three nasty plots, and then using the move Stored Power. And in that YouTube video, I explained what Stored Power does, but Stored Power is a psychic-type move, is base damage of 20. In relation to that, you know, a move like Psychic is base damage 90. But Storbauer, every time you have a status increase or a stat increase, it does 20 more damage, right? So like Storbauer ends up doing a lot. You can boost that by like an attack cheer. You can boost that with like a helping hand. You can boost that being on psychic terrain, right? There's like a lot of ways to boost that, but it results in the Slowbro doing nothing for 6 turns. And there's a high probability where Cinderace can just go, well, your stats are cleared. Start over.
Yeah.
So yep. This, look, somebody could come into my stream and they would be like, hey, bro, you know, I beat Cinderace with a Ferrothorn. I think Ferrothorn's really good. And it's like, yeah, man, I'm sure, you know, one, Ferrothorn's not even the game. Two, I'm sure you put Bright Powder on it and he missed like 5 Pyro Balls and you were able to defeat him. No one is doubting that, right? Like, you could, like, any Pokemon realistically could work, correct? Like, you could use a Gardevoir, you could use a Gyarados. I'm sure you've beat the raid with those Pokemon, right? I am sure you did. There's just better Pokemon or more consistent, more reliable Pokemon that you can use. I think Slowbro, Pelipper, Armorouge is one of them. But I think my problem with the stored power Slowbro is if the Slowbro was doing Chilling Water, while it's not doing a lot of damage, it is keeping everyone else alive. And while Iron Defense is great for keeping you alive, you're also not helping the team in any way at all. You're just, because once you're done with the 3 Iron Defenses, you're switching over to Nasty Plot. So there are 6 turns. You are not cheering. You are not healing. You are not decreasing Cinderace's special, like, physical attack stat. It's just like a very selfish way to play. It reminds me a lot of Azumarill players, right? Like when Azumarill belly drums play roughs and then dies, you know, it's not sure if it hits it, it's doing a lot of damage, but like they're never cheering. They're never healing themselves. And I think there are 2 ways to play, right? There is your solo way, which I think if you don't want to play with any friends, totally valid. If you don't want to do online, totally valid. If you just want to play with the NPCs, I think you should do the Slowbro build. I think you should do the 3 Iron Defenses, the 3 Nasty Plots, and do that. But it goes back to remind me of the bridge situation in Crota's End, where people will refuse to just learn mechanics to do it the easiest way ever. And again, like it's like I'll spend 20 minutes to climb this tower I'm not supposed to climb in order to like do it easier. Like, oh, I'll spend 6 turns just hitting stat buttons and then hope that Cinderace doesn't clear it and then I can hit the stored power button and then I'm done, right?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that we are seeing a huge change for the community without a lot of explanation, right? Like you have a very solo game. You have a game that tells you to just power through, buff yourself. Like, these are all the things that work in the PvE content. And they're putting out raid bosses that don't use any of the skills that they taught you over 40 hours of the game, right? Like, you have to think about these things in a very different community way that just isn't in the game until you hit this content. And it's fascinating to watch people struggle against that idea, because it wasn't even in Sword and Shield. Sword and Shield was turn-based. And so you all stated your turn. And this is such a radical change on how to play these games that doesn't even really exist in 1 to 5 star content. Like you can power through those, not a problem. And I think the company has done itself somewhat of a disservice by not really talking about how you need to interact with other people during these raids. They've left it pretty much up to everybody else. Because like that article was okay, but was not great in the fact that it really didn't set the mindset other than the cheer section of you're there to help everybody in the raid succeed. And I think for people who've played a lot of MMOs, who are play even like Unite, where you're sort of used to having to support your team, that changeover is easier. But I think for a lot of the player base who maybe have never played those type of cooperation aspects of any game, I think we are just going to see a big struggle. And I worry that that is eventually going to be a turnoff of these things, because they really need to step up their communication, I think, around the community aspect of 6 and 7 star rate more than they've done.
Yes. And this is why I'm not blaming people about on it.
I am.
Just after having done so many, so many random raids last night. But the most frustrating raid that I did was I went in there with my Armor Rouge and there were three other Slowbro. And every single one of those three other Slowbro was just defending themselves for the first few turns. There was no attacks hitting the Cinderace at all. I was getting pretty much knocked down to very low health every turn and was focused on healing myself because none of them were taking any damage, but I was going to die and I was going to lose the raid for all of us. And that's what ended up happening yep. because they were not focused on helping anyone other than themselves.
This is exactly the problem too. This is like, it's not even that Azumarill is bad. Azumarill is a great Pokemon. Right? Like, it does a lot of damage. The problem, it's literally the player who is playing Azumarill is the problem. It is these slow, it is what Hannah just said. If stored power, there is no if. If you do 3 iron defenses and 3 stored powers, you will do about 80% of Cinderace's HP. I've seen it happen. I mean, you could also do the same thing with Armor Rouge, which I've proven time and time again last night that, like, Armor Rouge can do way more damage faster than Slowbro. It can. There's no contest. But, like, 3 Slowbros do not need to be doing that. That's the thing. Is, like, why are you guys all doing the same thing? And it goes back to Azumarill. You all don't need to belly drum play rough. Like, you just don't. Like, only maybe two of you need to do that. Like, literally one of those Slowbros stopped being selfish and just focused on hitting Chilling Water or Defense Cheer or Heal, I'm sure that raid would have went smoothly.
Yeah, I also think the game is hampered by the lack of communication. Because everybody goes in there with their Pokemon and with their assigned way to play that. And you can't say, hey, everybody, if we all Iron Defense, we're not going to get it. Because there's no way to communicate that. And then once you...
You're saying if I hit the D-pad, there's no, like, please don't Iron Defense button that I can check.
But there's also no time to do that.
But also you can't stop the play style that you came in with, right? Like, there isn't yet a Pokemon raid knowledge of when to make appropriate choices. Like, people who have raided in Final Fantasy XIV know when you see the cast bar, you have to stop healing, and everybody's aware that healers are going to run, and so that you have to adjust your tactics for this window. And we don't have that yet. We don't have a community knowledge because they've just done not a great job of explaining what you need to do to succeed. They half butted it. They need to go further. And I think if anything else, what I would like to see more of from the content creators that make builds is also things of, like, here's how you read what's happening when there's no communication. If people do this, this is what you need to compensate for, because people don't have a tribal knowledge in Pokemon of how to do a raid yet, how to do a 4-man something, because even in Dynamax Adventures, you could power through. It was still turn-based. I think one of the biggest issues that we are butting up against that causes these frustrations is people know my Slowbro is supposed to do this. I only know how to do this. I don't know how to adapt. Nobody explained to me how to adapt. Nobody's told me if these 5 things are falling, where do I go? I don't know that. I was told I do 6 bulk ups and then hit it and I'll win. Nobody explained what should happen if I have other people doing that. What do I do now? And I think that is going to be a struggle for a while until people get used to this new dynamic in Pokemon.
And I think that's why none of my builds will ever recommend those kind of strategies.
Right.
You know, when people are like, why aren't you recommending Azumarill or somebody was like, what about Salamence? Salamence resists high jump kick. It resists Pyro Ball. And I was like, yeah, Salamence does resist all of that. But Salamence is a selfish Pokemon. There's nothing that Salamence learns that benefits the other three members. And if you look at my Slowbro build with like Chilling Water, that benefits everyone on the team. Psychic Terrain benefits all the other psychic Pokemon on the team. The Slowbro build I picked decreases Cinderace's attack. It increases anyone using other psychic attacks. It has possibility of damage. Rain Dance can make Chilling Water stronger. So if you have two Chilling Waters or there's a non-fire type, whatever, you know, like the damage is decreased. Pelipper is the same way. Armor Rouge is the same way. There was an instance most of the time I was Slowbro and I was Chilling Water and I was healing. And every single turn one, I set Psychic Terrain. And then I normally healed after that because obviously Cinderace does two moves and does a bunch of damage. So Psychic Terrain, heal, Chilling Water, heal. And there was only one time when I played Slowbro the way I played it that we lost. And somebody came in and they didn't say anything in chat. Totally cool, right? No big deal. And they were Armor Rouge. And they started off and they hit Expanding Force. And then they hit Expanding Force. And then they hit Expanding Force. And that's all they did, right? They just hit Expanding Force. Their name was Jonathan. And I was like,
oh, call out now.
And I was like, Jonathan, I know you're in my Twitch stream right now. That's the only way you joined. I was like, we are going to lose this raid. Like we have like, you know how like the health bar is like 50%, right? Shield is up, health bar is 50%. Our little timer bar is at like 20%. I was like, Jonathan, if you can hear me right now and you're using the Armor Rouge I recommended, because I don't know how else you got here. I was like, if you have Acid Spray, hit it. Like you are not the hero you are trying to be with just spamming Expanding Force. And then all of a sudden, Armor Rouge used Acid Spray. And like my Twitch chat lost their mind. They're like, oh my gosh, Jonathan. And I was like, all right, Jonathan, listen to me, Jonathan, I need you to Acid Spray again. And all of a sudden, Armor Rouge, Acid Spray. And I was like, holy cow, Jonathan, we're going to win this. I believe in you. I need you to Acid Spray one more time, Jonathan. And then it was like Acid Spray. And I was like, holy cow. I was like, Jonathan, all you have to do now is hit Expanding Force. You just got to hit that button and we win. And then it was like Cinderace has cleared its own stats. And we were close. Like yeah. It's also you make the tools, right? Sometimes people just still don't know how to use them,
right?
Like that Acid Spray is so good, like Chilling Water is so good, and it helps everyone.
Yeah,
you know, I'll continue to make graphics, I'll continue to recommend Pokemon that would help. That's why I recommended Gripsnarl for Charizard, right? Like if you were joining random raids and everyone is Azumarilling, you can at least reflect, you can spirit, like you can help keep those alive.
Yeah.
Slowbro using Iron Defense, he ain't keeping anyone alive. But he's keeping himself alive.
I think people really honestly need to understand that the raids are a cooperative
thing. They need a tutorial for the raids as good as their original tutorials for catching Pokemon in the beginning of each game. They need something as hand-holdy as that for the hard raids.
You know, there's a reason why the most played class in any MMO is the damage-dealing class, right? Like, they're easier to play, the choices are simple, you get to do big numbers, and it's fun. There's a reason why nobody likes to tank and nobody likes to heal, they're the most important jobs sometimes, but they're the most stressful jobs a lot of the time. You don't necessarily get to see the big things happen, right? Like you have to be a person that enjoys supporting other people, and you have to be a person that enjoys making more complex decisions. Like I love tanking, I don't like healing. Mainly because I have difficulty just keeping track of everybody's health and where I'm supposed to be on the ground. Like I can't split my focus that much, but I love being Dancer, which does damage and does support moves, right? Like I love the combo thing. I think there's just, you know, we're going to run into a lot of people who like being damage dealers. I mean, that is Pokemon. And I think we really are going to, I'm curious to see if the community can switch to a, some of us are tanks, some of us are supporters, not everybody can be dealers mindset, or if they will just walk away from this types of raids.
I mean, a lot of the times, last point here, a lot of the times is you only really need one damage dealer. Like going back to the Slowbro thing, if the Slowbro wants to do stored power, then you need three other people to support that, where you don't need three people to all try to do the same thing when the result is, well, this was designed for just one Pokemon to do it. Like three Slowbros, one Armourouge, one Pelipper, two Slowbros, one Armourouge. Like, I don't think that combination for me ever failed at all. Like, it's just because the Armourouge just, the Armourouge is the one doing the most damage. The Slowbros are net reducing Cinderace's attack, as is the Pelipper. And there's a three different Pokemon that can heal and keep the Armourouge alive. And like,
and for me, when I went in to do all the raids with the randoms and I built an Armourouge, that was the one of the three that I built. I ended up being defense all the time because nobody else was doing it.
Which is,
I actually swapped out acid spray for clear smog because nobody else was doing anything that would help it deal less damage.
I never had to taunt, never had to clear smog because chilling water just was so great to cancel that. It was just a good move to press. The same frustration, like I said, it's the same frustration I have with Destiny or any other raid games. Obviously, you know, somebody's probably going to write on the YouTube of like, well, Destiny is much more complex of a game. At the end of the, sure, but that's what an analogy is. Also, like, what do you need to do in this Destiny raid? You need six people to cross a bridge.
Well, I mean, I will never say that Final Fantasy XIV dungeons aren't more complex and you have to be more aware, but also the things you do in those games are also more complex. And so it takes a very special person to be an excellent DPS, an excellent tank, and an excellent healer. Like, that is a very specific person that can swap between all those jobs flawlessly. We are not asking for you to do that much. We are asking for you to simply understand you need to be one of those other roles. And we can point to more complex reasons that have very concrete things to show why that combo works. A tank, two DPS, and healers are an excellent combo for a reason. Like, when you have specific roles and you know specifically what you're supposed to do, there are dungeons you can do, like Palace of the Dead is a thing where you can do with four healers. Sure can. Do you know how long that takes?
Yeah.
It takes forever. It's just because it's possible doesn't mean it's optimal.
Yeah, and again, like if I saw an Armourouge, I would want to make sure, I understand or should understand or you should understand that Armourouge is the main damage dealer. So that anytime the Armourouge has to stop to heal itself, that is less damage that it's doing. Whereas like if I see a Grimmsnarl, I think, I hope that Grimmsnarl is going to be setting Reflect. He's going to be healing. He's going to be fake. Like he's going to be support. That's another thing you have to learn of like, oh, this Pokemon is doing this. Yeah. Anyways. Too long on this. I like the Cinderace raids a lot. And when they come back, if you need help and you want to play with other people, I'll be doing the same thing. I like helping people get that thing done, just like I helped. I don't know why, but I had an obsession with helping people clear Destiny raids for the first time. Hey, hello, hi. It is the start of a new year. Happy 2023. This is just a Patreon ad. So if you haven't, hey, I know, look, start of the new year, people are canceling their different things. They're trying to cut back. They're trying to save money. I understand. But if you like listening to the podcast, you like what we do here, you can support on Patreon for as little as $5 a month. That's like $1.25 an episode if you enjoy the content. You also get a bunch of benefits and perks. And also, we're running a poster promotion right now. So if you subscribe at the $10 level for 3 months, you will get a beautiful Galar poster sent your way. The first shipments should be going out end of January, early February. But obviously, if you're not signed up now, if you sign up now, January, February, March, you would be getting it then at the end of March. If you sign up today at the $10 level. We got a ton of other rewards, but patreon.com/pkmncst if you want to support. If you listen to Apple Podcasts and you don't want to go out of your way to support on Patreon, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, and they also offer a 2-week free trial. And you can listen to all the exclusive episodes either there on Apple Podcasts or on Patreon if you subscribe at the $5 level. Both Patreon and Apple Podcasts offer ad-free episodes. That's all episodes, so you won't actually have to hear these Patreon ads anymore in the middle of the episodes when they pop up. But again, two ways to support. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, you can support there. Otherwise, you can head over to patreon.com/pkmncast. And, you know, if you can't support, that's totally cool. I really still hope you enjoy the episodes. And, yeah, I hope you enjoy this episode. Thank you for listening. This podcast is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by big wireless providers, if we've learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. And when I first heard that Mint Mobile offers premium wireless starting at just $15 a month, I thought, what's the catch?
The catch!
But after talking to them and using their service, it all made sense. There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they're the first company to sell wireless service online only. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you.
Look, if you hate your current phone bill, Mint Mobile offers premium wireless for $15 a month. Maybe you don't hate your current phone, but you want another phone. Maybe you want to be that person with two phones like me. And then people think you're just playing twice the amount of Pokemon Go. I'm not playing twice the amount of Pokemon Go, but you could be that person playing twice the amount of Pokemon Go for just $15 a month because you have two phones. But maybe you just want one phone. I can tell you by using Mint Mobile in Milwaukee, Minneapolis, Seattle, Boston, it works. It says a little 5G in the corner. I get the speeds. I log in. Pokemon Go working. You get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month, and the plan shipped to your door for free. You can go to mintmobile.com/pkmncast. That is mintmobile.com/pkmncast, and you can cut your wireless bill down to $15 a month. Pokemon Masters EX.
Yeah.
There was an update. On Christmas, you can now change your main character's appearance. New hair colors for the main character has been added. You can now change the style of the main character's hair and hat. Some hats cannot be worked with some hairstyles.
It's not as deep as you are all probably thinking. The hats are full cover up your head or a sun visor. And generally you go with the sun visor if you're going to change your hair because it's the only way you can see your hair. But you do have the option, and I support this for everybody, to either have bangs or no bangs.
Mm.
Choose your bang dial. Generally, bangs are bad. But you might like how bangs look with your particular hairstyle. But yeah, I think people are expecting, like, I can change my eyes, and I can change... No, it is literally your hair, and you get two choices of hat.
You can change the eye color. There is that.
They added Dawn to the dating simulator part of the game.
They did.
There's also a holiday season gem special. So this is going until January 10th. You'll be able to get reduced gems at a reduced price. I think the price is pretty okay. For a Pokemon gacha game. I think these prices are very good if you are considering. I'm not suggesting it, but if you like to spend money, I do think that this is probably the best deal in a while that they've done for gacha. There's also like a contest where you can like earn, you can like win like 60,000.
Yeah, they got a bunch of New Year's contests going on. The biggest thing they did, and I want to let people know, is they added in the feature where you can see teams people used successfully to defeat content. So there's a big thing of the legendary battles, and you can now go in, look at what somebody used for their team to beat that content, copy that team if you have them, and then attempt that content on your own. So this is an example of a company putting a feature that had always existed outside of their game and was a huge subject of YouTube videos and just putting it in their game simply. Watch somebody else do it and in-game hit the button, take their team, and try it yourself. A brilliant addition. It makes me actually want to try some of the harder content because I know, oh, I don't actually have to go outside and do a bunch of useless research. I can actually look in-game and see what people were doing. And if I have those, cool, I'll try it. Also, you get to see, even if you don't want to do it, you get to watch somebody else do this content, which is cool. You get to see what happens and what the battle looks like.
Oh, you just like see the whole battle?
Yeah, you can watch the whole battle.
And you see what buttons they press?
I haven't watched a full one yet. I sort of like just looked in and paused it. I like the steam. I'll get back to it. But generally over on the side now, because they changed the display, it lists the moves as they come up.
Oh, okay, so okay, okay.
And they added, it says the move and it says whether it's special or physical, but then it will show like the order. So you also kind of see what the turn order for speed is. Really a really good way to add this in. Because it's not for everything, but there's a lot. The replay things has a bug in it right now that they have admitted that sometimes when you want to replay, it just doesn't go. So they're working that out. But they are adding in so you can watch a lot of them and see how it went and then copy it. The only thing that you're probably not going to get is what their sync grid build was that they used, because you can build sync grids out a bunch of different ways. But this addition, I think, is probably the biggest and best change they've made to that game in a while. It just really is a way to say to your community, we want to help you do our harder content, and this is one of the ways we're doing it. And I, as much as I give Masters the Raz for being a dating simulator now, because it kind of is, they added Dawn into the dating sim. Things like this really, I think, show that they are committed to making a better game. And I think I want to just applaud them for this, because it's a big thing.
Is it accessible for the earlier story content too? Because I have a bunch of sync pairs. I go in and I log in and I get the free things and I get sync pairs, but I've never actually accomplished anything in that game.
Sounds like Masters.
Yeah, some of it, like the storyline stuff, is generally, I don't think they put it for the normal because you can just overpower the normal. Like normal stuff is set at a really low level. But for the higher, harder content, I know it's there for like the legendary raids. I know it's there for the champion stadium. I think you have to have done the normal on your own to unlock master mode, and then it's in master mode. But again, the normal difficulties, if you've got three maxed pairs that match the weaknesses, you'll get through it. Just
cool.
For the gem stuff, you just have to log in during this period. So just log in before January 7th, and then they're picking 10 winners to win 60,000 gems, 50 winners for 12,000 gems, 7,000 winners for 6,000 gems, 9,000 winners for 3,000 gems, 10,000 winners for 1,000 gems, and 200,000 winners for 600 gems. And if you don't win anything, they'll give you a 300 gems. So that'll just appear in your little package if you want or not. You literally just have to log in. So
you have to log in. I want to win the big thing so badly.
N 5-star anniversary 2021 in Reshiram has returned. He'll be here until February. Lily with Lunala.
Lily,
which anniversary
Lunala.
Is this? This is the 2021 anniversary.
Year's. Yeah.
She has returned until February. Gosh, there's a bunch of people that have returned. But those are probably the two big ones, is Lily and people like those characters.
Yeah, and they're really good. Think Bear.
There's a bunch of characters. You should log in anyways. I think there's still a $3,000 present until New Year's.
3,000 gem.
3,000 gem. You get 3,000 presents by logging in. It's crazy. Okay. Final bit of news here is I'm pulling this from Nintendo Life, but I mean, a bunch of people ran articles about this. There was a Japanese poll which asked people what their favorite Pokemon were. From my understanding, the poll was they asked 117,000 people Those people could only vote for one Pokemon. We have the poll. This is not an official Pokemon one, from my understanding. It was done through gamewith.jp. But hey, 117,000 people is a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
So our number one, to no surprise, and that was trainers around Japan. They were asked between the 16th and the 23rd of December, for the record. Number one, with no surprise, was Tinkaton, followed by Clodsire. And then number three, we heard for years, months, that people wanted cats to stay on four legs, but the votes say differently. Two-legged cat Meowscarada in third place.
People still want it on four legs.
Clearly didn't ruin the design, though. It was number three. Fuecoco, number four. Cerulege, number five. Tasaguri, number six. Sylveon, seven. Now you're probably like, what, Sylveon? They pulled all 400 Pokemon in the game. So Sylveon being the number one not Gen 9 Pokemon. Slitherwing, number eight. That's the prehistoric Volcarona, which is a very good choice, honestly. Lucario, number nine. Gardevoir and Mimikyu tied for number 10. So far, I mean, with the old Pokemon, there are like literally no surprises.
No, there's no surprises.
Koridon, number 12. That's actually interesting. We'll get back to that. Gengar, 13. Sprigatito, 14. Palmot, 15? I don't understand this pick. Umbreon, 16. Mousehold, 17. Miraidon, 18. Palmi, 19. Glaceon, 20. Dragapult, 21. No surprises there. Dragapult was incredibly popular. Garchomp, Hydreigon, Volcarona, Charizard, Luxray. Number 27, Iron Valiant. 28, Eevee. 29, Skellige. Quagsire, Pikachu, Quackwaval. Ditto. Number 34, Snom, Fido, Arcanine. Arcanine also always very popular. 37, Glamora?
Yeah.
I guess. 38, Fluttermane. 39, Screamtail. 40, Leafeon. 41, Azumarill. To be fair, Azumarill is a popular Pokemon. 42, Goomy, Altaria. Another Tasaguri, which I think is kind of unfair that...
Yeah.
But whatever. 45, Ampharos, Dragonite, Zorua, Espeon, Zoroark, and number 50 was Tyranitar.
I am somewhat surprised that, like, Jolteon, Vaporeon aren't in this list over Glaceon, Umbreon, Leafeon, right? Like, I always sort of assumed that the Gen 1 Eevee evolutions always were really high, but...
No, Umbreon and Espeon are always really high.
I knew those, but I always thought...
Glaceon,
like,
isn't always.
Yeah, Glaceon and Leafeon being so high is weird, especially higher than Espeon, because it's always, like, Umbreon number 2, Espeon number 3.
And, like, Jolteon, Flareon, and Vaporeon aren't in this list at all.
For good reason. They're not good.
Well, yeah. But I always sort of assumed, like, the Gen 1ers would come out for those, and they didn't.
I mean, look, the Gengar people were there. The Gengar people are secretly worse than the Charizard people. We've discussed this before. They're everywhere. I think the most interesting thing on this is Koridon is significant, not significant, Koridon is higher than Miraidon. We know, based off pictures, which are very scientifical and data-driven, that if you see a bunch of pictures of the Pokemon Center, there is a million Koridon plushes and there are no Miraidon plushes. This was a very common theme.
It was one shelf. it was one shelf.
This is a very common theme with Zacian and Zamazenta. It was very easy to find Zamazenta plushes. Zacian plushes were always sold out. If you look at any kind of polling, it was like, Violet was like 60-70% over Scarlet. Like, Violet was
but
just...
But if you looked at polling specifically for Koridon and Miraidon, especially after the games came out, Koridon was the favorite, was the preferred one. I mean, clearly from this poll, I'm feeling pretty good as someone who chose Scarlet from the very beginning.
No, what I am saying is I think the games coming out really showed that Koridon was the more interesting legend. And I felt this way personally. Like, I picked violet just because I like purple, right? That was my whole choice. Which one do you? I like purple. I'm going to pick the game that's purple. I never really felt a good connection with Mirrodon. I thought he was cool. Like, he's like a robot dragon. He's pretty all right. But, like, when I watched people's cutscenes for Koridon, I was like, man, why is Koridon way cooler? Like, it just has more personality. Even though they're, like, the same cutscenes, but, like, I feel like Koridon was just animated, like, better.
I always wonder if it's... There's sort of a built-in gulf between anything that is clearly somewhat robotic. Like, I think as humans, we tend to look at mechanical things through a very different lens, and there's no way to get beyond the very mechanical, electric, and slightly robotic feel of, like, the whole iron area.
You're biased against them, though.
Yeah.
Biases on this show? Never.
I think that might be particularly true for you, Greg.
Look, I prefer Mirrodon over Koridon. I think
I
like my electric lizard better than I like the derpy thing running around on its legs when it's got wheels.
That's what I love.
I know, well, I don't like it.
I love that. I think a lot of people connected with Koridon more than people connected with Mirrodon. I think that, and the polling shows this. Like, I wouldn't say Mirrodon, like, I wouldn't say Mirrodon was one of my favorites after playing, but every time I watched somebody play Scarlet, I was like, man, Koridon's way cool. Like, he's running on legs, he got this big old tongue hanging out of his mouth. Like, he seemed more, whatever. It's a poll, but I just thought that was interesting that Violet obviously sold more copies, but Koridon placed higher on this list. The other shocking thing is there's no Quaxly on this list at all. Quackquaval made it to number 32, which, you know, some people don't like the design, some people do, but usually starters...
Yeah.
Are incredibly popular compared to their final evolution. Skeleridge is on the list, Meowscarada is on the list, and then obviously Sprigatito and Fuecoco very high on the list. But yeah, there was no Quaxly at all. Clotsire's great. He came in at number 2. I mean, no complaints there.
I loved my Clotsire.
Number one.
I wonder if Clodsire's up there so high because I feel like Clodsire was, for a lot of people, an easy carry in a lot of gyms. Like, Clodsire seemed to, like, just have the right typing and the right moves to, like, get through most gyms with no problem.
It's a very good typing, just in general. Like, it does a lot, and it gets access to a lot.
And you get it so early, so it's easy for people to get it. And it was kind of a surprise because it was the new evolution for the regional variant of Uber.
Yeah. For Paradox Pokemon, the only one in the... No, there was a couple in the past. So we have Slitherwing. And then there was Fluttermane and Screamtail. So those were all from Scarlet. And then the only future one was Iron Valiant, which, you know, makes sense. People like Gardevoir Gallade. Shocking that there's no Roaring Moon. And there's no Salamence on this list at all. Like, Salamence is an incredibly popular Pokemon. They were one of the only pseudo legendaries that didn't make top 50. And I thought, when I looked at all the Paradox, I was like, oh, like, Roaring Moon is going to be the number one for everyone. And it's not, I guess. I think Screamtail's great. I don't love Fluttermane. I never liked Mischievous or Miss Magius. Fluttermane's just like. Bigger necklace, like put that Marge Simpson necklace on.
It bothers me how much longer one of its eyebrows is than the other. I know that they do this with other Pokemon, but one of them is so much longer than the other.
I don't think I've noticed that.
Well, you'll notice it now.
Oh yeah, now I will. I don't get the appeal of Glamora. I think it's cool, but not like.
The thing is when it's in its, I don't get the appeal when it's closed up form. When it's in its flower form, I absolutely understand the appeal.
Mm-hmm. When it's on the walls and caves.
Yeah. But I think when they ever put it in lists, it's like this weird torpedo thing. And I'm like, that is not the version you should be using because it's so much better in its open flower form.
Apparently, Pokemon fans like swords because Zacian, number one, but also, well, not on this list, but you know how people love Zacian. Cerule Edge being number 5 here and Armor Rouge not in the top 50 at all. I liked Armor Rouge more.
Nah, Cerule Edge is so much better, so cooler.
Tasaguri is great. I think people just like the concept of, like, it's a sushi Pokemon. What more do you want?
Yeah, it's a sushi dragon. It's awesome.
Mousehold being on here, also not surprising. Yeah, I mean, like, we go through each one, but it's a pretty interesting list. I would like to, you know, maybe revisit a top 50 Pokemon in a couple months to see what has changed, or, you know, sometimes it takes a while for people to connect with specific Pokemon.
I'm waiting for the online checker, I haven't checked back, to add all the Gen 9 so I can redo my top 10 where you click through and say, I pick these 5 out of this list.
Do you think Tinkaton is that high for you, Greg?
Oh, Tinkaton has replaced, definitely has kicked a couple things out of the running, for sure, out of my top 10. I honestly think, like, Empoleon is on the edge now. Like, I have to strongly think if Empoleon falls out of the top 10 because Tinkaton exists.
I would like Tinkaton more if I didn't love Corviknight. That's the problem for me. I love Corviknight.
If Corviknight wasn't an invasive species, we wouldn't have this issue now, would we?
Corviknight's good for raids, by the way. We'll end, or we'll start 2023 with an important question. I want to know your guys' favorite Paradox Pokemon from Scarlet and your favorite Paradox Pokemon from Violet. Tough.
No, not tough. they match up with the list for me. I like, and I don't have their names yet because I haven't been interacting with them as much in game, but Slithertail? What's that one?
Slitherwing?
Slitherwing and Iron Valiant, the two that are the top for each of them on that list. Those are my favorites.
I really like Roaring Moon a lot. I hate Sandy Shocks with a burning passion.
Have you seen him move, though? Have you seen him walk?
I have. It's awful. I hate every aspect of it. I hate.
What? I mean, that's not surprising. You don't like Magnemite.
I don't like Magnemite, and they made it worse.
They gave him fur, Greg. They gave the robot fur.
They didn't. They gave it magnetic sand and called it fur. It's awful. It's awful. So I really think Roaring Moon's a great design.
I do, too.
For the future ones, I do really like Iron Valiant. I think Iron Valiant's cute, but I honestly sort of lean more towards Iron Jungleus. I think that take on Hydreigon is really good. I'm not a huge fan of Iron Bundle.
Great,
it's fine, but it doesn't sing to me.
He not only is Iron Bundle the best Violet Paradox Mon, he has the best name. Iron Bundle. He's so good. I think what sells me on Iron Bundle is his feet are little skis. They're really great.
It's pretty well designed. Here's the thing, is it's a good design, but I don't particularly like the Delibird design. Again, I'm not a Gen 2 fan. So, like, seeing a slightly weirder version of it just does not do anything for me. Iron Hands is okay.
I'm just not a Hariyama fan, so Iron Hands didn't do anything for me.
I do think Iron Moth is a good design. And I think Iron Thorns is a good Mecha Godzilla design. Like, I can appreciate, like, the kaiju aspects of them when they make mecha versions of the kaiju. Like, I like those. I think they're good. The thing I have a problem with some of the ancient Pokemon is they don't feel particularly primal enough for me. Like,
which ones?
I feel like Screamtail feels like 80s Maul more than ancient civilization to me. Brute Bonnet feels Hot Topic bad hair to me than primal jungle to me. I think Fluttermane's pretty good. I think Slitherwing is really good. Sandy Shocks is terrible. I think Roaring Moon feels really primal to me. I think Great Tusk feels very primal, kind of along the lines of the Mamoswine line. I just feel like Screamtail and Brute Bonnet are way too my past 80s, 70s weird design than ancient civilization-y design.
I think the weird thing here, and obviously this is intentional, is all the future Pokemon are iron.
Yeah.
And then all the past Pokemon, like, nothing repeats itself. Sandy, Brute, Great, Scream, Flutter, Slither, Roaring. And then all the iron Pokemon, at least from my perspective, is they look like current Pokemon. Like, they just look like robotic versions. I think the Hydreigon one doesn't really actually look that different. It just looks more robotic, at least with, like, I guess the same for Tyranitar. At least the Gardevoir one is like Gardevoir and Gallade mixed together. But yeah, the old ones, like even like, I think, I don't know why they did this. I don't know why, like, Volcarona and Donphan got like double dipping treatment. But like, Iron Moth looks like a Volcarona, and Slitherwings kind of does, like, it does, but like, not.
No, it does.
It does, but like, you
can tell they're related, but it's not the same Pokemon.
Right, it's not like a moth. Like, it's not like
it's literally the moth on the ground. It's just walking.
It's not, though.
It has like a thick dinosaur tail too. Like, yeah. Volcarona and Iron Moth don't have like this huge green thick tail coming out of it. Like, it doesn't have a tail at all because it's a moth. It's just like the old Pokemon, like Amoongus or Brute Bonnet, like, it literally has a beak, whereas like Amoongus doesn't have a beak. It's like really kind of like, none of this is bad, by the way. It's just like it with the names and the designs, it's like the Paradox past Pokemon are more stark. And the future Pokemon are just like, yep, this is a robotic Delibird. This is a robotic Tyranitar. Yeah, I mean,
they made a very interesting dystopian choice for future.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it is definitely an interesting design decision, because they did do a very dystopian, artificial feel, kind of it sort of feeds into this sort of weird, like, dire warning of where we're going without it being really in your face. But they did do a very sort of natural things don't survive in the future. And it's a very dystopian take. And you either like that take or you don't. And like, there is a lot of people are like, you wouldn't name everything iron. And I think that for me, that feeds into the dystopian homogeny that is part of a lot of sort of dire warning future anime, dire warning future storylines, like, unless we take action now, we are going towards a less diverse, more artificial society. And I think they really took that trope to heart here, which is why the names don't bother me. I hope in the DLC they will explore that design choice more. Because, again, I agree that the names in the past are more interesting, but also whenever we tend to romanticize the past, and we all have this big dinosaur kick, right? Like, we're fascinated by the big lizards, and we give them wild names, and we pretend that they all look like lizards, when in reality they all had fur, and we have no idea what they actually look like, right? Like, we're guessing right now based off of bones, and we're not good at drawing what they look like. But there is a, in the design choices, there is a romanticized savagery of the past that doesn't necessarily match up. Like, these are all really savage looking things. And there's a very clear, deliberate design choice for the future of a very sanitized, homogenous thing. And I think, looking at them both, I think they were really big, strong design choices. But things like, let's make a savage Screamtail, a Jigglypuff, I don't think that works as well as, let's make a more savage looking Volcarona and that Slithering. Like,
yeah, there's no doubt there was like a lot of thought going in.
Right. Oh yeah.
And I think maybe the future stuff seems really sterile on purpose. That's why they all have the same names.
Yeah.
And the past stuff also seems on purpose, because like Misdreavus, Jigglypuff, and Magneton, those are not the final forms. All three of those evolve, but they all evolve with stones. Right. So they're stating like, oh, those stones weren't around, and that's why it's a Jigglypuff and not a Wigglytuff.
Yeah. Yeah, they made some very interesting, like, if you really just think about what they're trying to say without them saying it, like, both future and past have very interesting stories. Particularly since most of the future, even though they're called iron, aren't steel type.
Only one of them are steel, and it's
yeah, only
it's
one of them
the
is steel. And so there is so much to sort of unpack in these designs and namings that I really hope DLC allows us to explore what their vision was of the future and the past.
Well, we know that the DLC is bringing at least some more story because there have been hints saying that they clearly know that there hasn't been an explanation for how the books were in that point in time.
Right.
Yeah. Yet.
I'm very curious about it. I think both sets, when you sort of look at them as sets and the choices they make, tell a really interesting story.
A story that is not going back to Kalos.
No. Oh, well, maybe ancient Kalos.
I don't think so. well, that's our episode. Thank you for listening. We made it through. Again, if you need help with Cinderace, obviously by the time this podcast goes up, it'll be gone, but it'll be another weekend. What was that? The 15th? Something like that.
The 15th, yeah.
12th, 13th, 14th, and 15th. I'll be around on Twitch to help out. And I'll continue making graphics. I plan to make another raid video of other mons that could help you. I think, you know, people like using their favorite mons, and Hannah used the word competitive earlier. I don't know if I would consider them like
strategic.
Yeah, I was gonna say I don't know what another better word is, because like you build these raid mons totally different than you build a competitive mon.
I
think the stuff is really fun. I'm really liking Scarlet and Violet. I am very excited to see what else comes. But this is the end of the episode, so thank you, Greg. Thank you, Hannah. If you're watching on YouTube, I don't think we've... What is our question for YouTube? What should they comment?
Obviously we want to know what their favorite Paradox Pokemon are, right?
Yeah, okay. That, okay,
like,
so...
I want to know... Which, like, we saw the official list from Japan, but we don't know your official list.
That's true. But we'll keep it simple. So, favorite future form, favorite past form on the YouTube. Yep. If you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, if you want to leave us a review, that would be great. We will be back next week. Thank you for listening. This has been another episode of the Pokemon Podcast, and we are...
super effective.
Not bringing Iron Defense Slowbro to... Team Cinderace raids super effective.
But a YouTuber told me to do it.
No.
This podcast is brought to you by Patreon. If you would like to support our show and what we do here, you can head over to patreon.com/pkmncast. A huge shout out to our producers who support our show, starting with Jessica, Kay, Matthew, Sean, Stephen, Anthony, Brian, Gray, Josh, Casey, Catherine, Bovine, Nate, Ryan, and Stuart. And a huge shout out to our executive producers of Brady and Spencer. Thank you so much for supporting our show. We'll be back next week. If you too would like to support our show, you can head over to patreon.com/pkmncast, and we will see you guys next time.